We're continuing our series, Judaism Head to Toe. And we've worked our way down from the neck to the chest. So you're going to wear shirts and suits and ties. And when it comes to garments, so we need to buy garments that are halachically permissible. So we discussed that if there's a type of garment that Jews don't wear out of modesty, then you're not supposed to wear that garment if everyone else doesn't wear it out of modesty. If you move to Egypt and the Jewish men wear robes, wear a robe. You move to France and the Jewish men wear all kinds of ties and jackets and who knows what, wear whatever they wear. You move to Ireland and the Jewish men wear kilts. Okay, you go with the flow, right? But if you move in and you find out that the knights of your day, you're living 700 years ago and the knights have this big lock of hair, and the Jews don't do that. Jews keep their hair crew cut, a short haircut. You're not supposed to grow your hair out like the non-Jews do. Meaning if there's something in the garb, in the wear, that we do different out of modesty. So then we say you're not supposed to change from that. That's where lotelchu applies. We don't say, don't wear a suit. The non-Jews wear a suit. You know, it was an Italian that invented the suit. Maybe, I don't know. That's fine. You know, that's if everyone does it, we can do it too. We don't say, don't grow your hair, because non-Jews grow their hair. Jews also grow their hair. So long as there's a range that Jews also do, and I'm within that range, I'm okay. The second there becomes something that's customary that Jews don't do, out of modesty, and non-Jews do, I'm not supposed to do it. Then there are things that non-Jews do, and they don't even know why they're doing it. So then a Jew's not supposed to do that either. Those two fall under the heading, don't be like the non-Jews. When the Torah says, "Lotechub chukot amim asher nimshalech mipenechem," don't go in the statutes of the nations. So I'm allowed to use a tissue like they use a tissue. I'm allowed to wear shoes like they wear shoes. I'm allowed to drive a car like they wear cars. What does it mean, don't be like them? So Chazal said it breaks down into two criteria. One is things that we do different out of modesty. I shouldn't do like them. The other is things that they do that no one knows why they do it. So if, for example, when you say something, people say, knock on wood. You ask them, what does knock on wood do? They say, I don't know, but my mother did that. Or when you say something good, they go, poo, poo, poo. And you say, what does poo, poo, poo do? Or if they tell you, don't whistle, it brings in demons. Or they tell you all kinds of things. And you say, where does this come from? There are people who won't go into the house. When they buy a new house, they'll first throw in salt and flour. And where did that come from? People won't put in an oven without putting a penny under it. Where did that come from? So there's no logical explanation for this. So things that we don't have a logical explanation, we assume that it's an old pagan ritual that they held on to, and no one knows why. When children were born, even Jewish children, there used to be this custom that they'd wave them around the candle. So Rambam writes, this goes back to the days they pass them through a fire as a pagan ritual. Don't do it. Rambam says, when your wife gives birth and they want to take your kid and just wave them around the candle, say no. Why do you say no? Because there's no logical reason for it. People put on these red strings around their hand. Why would you wear a red string around your hand? It's annoying. Why would you do that? So I know they have people who sell them to bless you with it, and they say, I went around Kevi Rachel with it and all that. Where does that come from? So it's written in the Tosefta and Tractate Shabbos, there was this pagan ritual they used to tie red strings around people's hands. So that's what Rabbi Mordechai Eliyahu said, people shouldn't do it. Wow. I'm sorry if I'm taking away someone's business here. So coming back to... So when we get dressed, we don't have to stick to a specific dress code. You should stick with what's normal in the Jewish community you're in. That's our general rule, and we have the prohibition, Isul D'Oraita, biblical prohibition of doing things different in a way that's immodest. Next, we come to the clothing we buy. One of the areas that in most countries is not enforced is the labeling of clothing. I remember there was a store here around the corner, they closed down. I once walked by the store and I saw a cashmere sweater, 25 shekel. That's interesting, right? But no one enforces it. You know, it doesn't cost money to write a sign. 25 shekel, okay. So this is also in the United States, it's not enforced. which means that when you buy an article of clothing, you don't really know what it's made out of. All industries today have become more and more complex. You buy a fruit. What could be non-kosher about an apple? Well, the coating that they put on apples to make them shine are derived from bugs. Okay, the wax that's used to coat in the United States, that's used to coat the apples, is a wax that is actually derived from bugs, from flies. So you'll ask me, why do they derive wax from flies? And the answer is, I have no clue. But there's a reality. That's what they do. So now is it kosher? You're eating bug wax. Maybe that's edible wax. Maybe the other wax is not edible. Maybe bug wax is more edible. I don't know. This was discussed in Responsa. The stronger kashriyot in Israel won't allow them to coat the fruits with that type of wax. If you buy a simpler kashrut, then you might get it. And there are responses written about why it is permissible to eat it. It's no longer edible, etc. When we deal with clothing, so that industry is also complex. Nothing's as simple as it used to be. So if you're buying a wool jacket, they might put in shoulder pads and sew them in with linen thread because it's a stronger thread. You buy a jacket and the lapel of the jacket has fibers that make it stronger, tougher. And right all along the lapel of the jacket, you have the lapel folds in, folds out. There's a lining in that lapel. Very often that's made of linen. The buttons of a suit are sometimes sewed with linen. The Torah prohibits wearing a garment that has a mixture of wool and linen together. That's what's called in Torah terminology, sha'atnez. Sha'atnez is a garment that has wool and linen mixed together. Now, it's not only a garment, it's anything that envelops you, meaning it could also be a mattress or a pillow or a blanket. And I don't know what the deal is today, but when I was getting married 15 years ago, so there were still mattresses that were being imported from Europe that had wool and linen. And that's prohibited. You're not allowed to lie because we say you're not just lying on it. You sink into it. It really does envelop you. So find out. I'm saying you guys are holding by buying mattresses. Find out what's going on. So many companies in Israel will have a label that says no shatnez. You want to find out if that label is trustworthy. Anyone could write a label and sew it in. If it's a big company, if it's Bagir, if it's a known company, they're not playing games. But if it's a not known company, you might want to find out. What clothing have to be checked? So the way it works is the more expensive the suit, the more likely that it has shatnez. I once brought someone, a friend of mine, a businessman, was getting rid of 5 suits. Each suit was an $800,000 suit. So I brought him here. I gave him out in the machon. But I told the guys, all of you have to check the suits. What do you think? The suits had shatnez. So the guys invested 150, 200 shekel to change the lining. And for 200 shekel, they got an $800 suit. The shatnez laboratory was willing to do it for them. But the flip side is that my friend, my compadre, who donated those suits, was wearing shatnez his whole life. So the more expensive the suit you buy, the more obligatory it is to check. If you're buying expensive suits, then you shouldn't wear them without checking them. Where can you get your suits checked? So there's a shatnez laboratory, a very famous shatnez laboratory in Mea Shearim, on Mea Shearim Street number 6. They're only open small hours. You call in and they'll tell you in Yiddish what hours they're open. That's an answering machine. I don't, maybe today they also have a Hebrew message. In my day it was only Yiddish. They're open in the afternoon hours. I don't remember if it's 12 to 2 or 2 to 4. The rest of the time they're either learning or working, checking your garments. They're very good. Because they're the one laboratory that if you bring in 30 items, they can look it over and they won't take a penny and they'll say, you don't have to check this, you don't have to check this, take it home, and they won't take a penny. Other places will tell you that after you paid them 5 shekel a garment or something. They're not just going to send you home with them. That's why I like the Mea Shearim laboratory. There is a laboratory right here around the corner when you go to Kanfei Nesharim. You go up to the light, you make a left, on your right hand side there's a store. The Kiryat Moshe laundromat on your right side. So I assume they still have a person there who checks for shatnez. You could drop off your clothing there and get them shatnez checked. There's one in Harnov. There's one in the Rav Shefa Mall, up by Shamgar Street. It's in the Rav Shefa Mall. They also have a shatnez laboratory. Whenever I buy a suit, so I stipulate with the seller, we write it on my receipt, that I can return the suit if they find shatnez in it. I can return it and get a full refund. Right? I don't want store credit. If I paid him with money, I want money. So if you have an American Express, an American Express, then he has to take it back if you paid with that, right? That's another good way to secure yourself. Just get your clothing checked within the first month or two that you bought them. You should not wear them without checking them. Now, many years ago, I get a phone call one night from a chatan. He's getting married the next morning. And he says he just realized he didn't check his suit for shatnez. So I asked him two questions. Number one, where are you located? Bring me the suit. Number two, how much did you pay for the suit? So it was a very cheap suit. So under such circumstances, if he would not have been able to get a shatnez checked, he would be allowed to wear it. A cheap suit, you pay 350 shekel for a suit, you should get a shatnez checked. But if it's his wedding day, and that's a suit, and he forgot to get it checked, he's allowed to wear it that day. Because on a cheaper suit, you don't have to assume it has shatnez. Our custom is to check them, but it's not to the point where we would say it's prohibited on his wedding day to wear it until he gets it checked. If it were an expensive suit, it was an $800 suit, then we'd have a problem. The bottom line was, I called one of the shatnez places, and I told them, I have a chatan who's getting married tomorrow, I need to get it checked. And they said, come on over, we'll do it right away, and they did. That was the nice ending of the story. So when do you have to check a garment for shatnez? If it has either wool or linen in the ingredients in the clothing. You buy pants, many of the pants are polyester, they're made of other stuff. Viscosa, another fancy name for polyester. So if it's all synthetic materials or cotton, you don't have to check it for shatnez. You buy a cotton shirt, you know, cotton mixed with polyester. You don't need to check it for shatnez. You only have to check for shatnez either on a type of garment which they know is prone to have shatnez. They said, though you said 10 years ago or 12 years ago, they said that the ties that came from Spain were prone to have shatnez. So I once got a tie, someone gave me a tie from Spain. It did not have shatnez. And getting a shatnez check ruined it. They took out too many threads, like fell apart. But I checked, because I don't have a choice. They're telling me it's prone to have shatnez. So you have to check when the garment you have has either wool or linen. The way they check is they know where to pull threads from. They'll pull threads from the buttons. They'll pull threads from the lapel. They'll pull threads from the shoulder pads. They'll pull threads from the garment itself. Meaning there are specific locations they're checking, and they look under a microscope, and they see what are the threads made out of. They know under a microscope how to tell if the threads are wool, linen, polyester. In ancient times, they used to burn the threads. And by seeing how the thread burnt, they could tell what it was made out of. Today, we're sophisticated people. We do it with a microscope. Right, right. Yes, sir. Right, but on cheap suits, it's a rarity. There has to be a certain amount of prevalence in order for us to be obligated. The Mishnah, in the end of Kilayim, the last chapter, discusses things that it's so rare that you find shatnez that you don't have to check. So on cheap suits, it's very rare that you find shatnez, and that's why on cheap suits, the fact that we check is a custom. It's not a chiyuv d'oraita. We do not know of a tam, but the Medrash Tanchuma says that being that Cain and Hevel, Cain and Abel, Cain brought fruits, which Chazal say was linen. He was growing, so what he brought was from a linen tree. That was part of the fruits he brought. And Hevel was a shepherd, he brought animals with wool. So Chazal say that being that was the first murder, that's why Hashem didn't want the two to combine in a garment we wear. That's one reason that's quoted in the Medrash.
Okay, and then the last question is, let's say Let's say,
who said that? I wouldn't say that. No. Shabbos hurts your parnasah. Yom Tov hurts your parnasah. We say that this is the best possible life you can live, but if you were able to sell pork, you might make more money. It says that people who grew pigs made a lot of money. It was considered a very good income, and you're not allowed to grow pigs. Mitzvot can hurt your parnasah. That can happen. No, I would not say they cannot. We do have the concept that b'mekom seida lo gazur rabbanan. There are times where b'mekom seida, there are times where incurring substantial financial loss, the rabbis will say, if we made a rabbinic institution, we forgo our institution because we don't want you to incur that loss. There are times that we say that.
Okay. So let's say a person's wardrobe, he takes two items in his jacket. Let's say it's winter. He takes all his jackets, all his sweaters, and they're all pasul.
So he should go to a secondhand store and get himself new clothing. The Gemara says if a person was walking in the street and he discovered that the clothing he was wearing was shatnez, he has to take them off. Gadol kvod abriot. Ordinarily we say that human dignity overrides so many things. Why doesn't human dignity count here? We say, right, the honor of Hashem comes first. There's a biblical mitzvah not to wear shatnez. So we also say that if you see your friend and you notice the suit he's wearing and you know it's shatnez, pull him aside. Don't tell him in the middle of the street, right? Walk him home and say, buddy, we got to talk real fast. don't do that to him, right? but a person can't say, you know, it's hard. On a lotus, on a biblical prohibition, there's no amount a person is limited to in his, and how much it costs him, he has to prevent himself from transgressing. No, shatnez is a lotus.